Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So far, fast and free,
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for June 20th, 2023. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated podcast feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You can set up a one-time donation or a recurring one. If you click the red box, it says sponsors podcast. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joining alongside, as always, Case Lowe. And Case, we finally hit Texas summer, man, and I am worried for my crops.
And it's funny you mentioned Texas summer, because right now I'm watching some Chicago White Sox against these surging Texas Rangers who are having a pretty delightful Texas summer, it seems like.
You know, it's interesting how this team has basically decided, we finally got an ace pitcher to want to come to Texas, and he blew out his UCL, and now Nathan Eovaldi might be the AL starter at the All-Star game at this rate. It's wild.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I watched them last night beat up on the White Sox, and I determined, hey, these guys are pretty fun to watch, and it really wasn't until I don't know, a few weeks ago where I realized, oh, the Rangers are really good this year, because I just assumed the AL West would shake out with the Astros way above everybody else, the Angels being super disappointing, and the Mariners and A's being bad as they always do. And then, you know, sure as shit, month into the season, I was like, wait a minute, Texas is good this year. That's awesome. And they are very good.
Yeah, I still think they have the second best record to the Rays, but it's something that, like, last year they were kind of setting things up that it was kind of a disappointing season. But like the big idea was like, all right, we got Corey Seager and Marcus Semien in here. They had a pretty down year, but now they're kind of back to their all-star kind of caliber. And you're just adding people like Adolis Garcia onto it, really coming to their own. And it does not have the vibe of an 2009 or 2010 Texas Rangers team by a near. Like, there's not really like those kind of players that mean something to the fan base at this moment, but it's kind of interesting. Like, it's the for once that's not really done by like Texas's farm system. This has been mostly open the pocketbooks. And Case, you were able to watch that game last night. I can't, because Texas is one of the Diamond Sports Group teams.
Okay, and what's the I don't think I know everything about the Diamond Sports Group issues. What's going on there?
Oh, this is the SBG sports bankruptcy.
Okay, well, okay, like, that's what I thought. Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Great. That's a great industry.
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic industry. And the Rangers were like one of the first like few teams that were that cashed in on the local sports deals. Like, they got their deal done like right after they came out of bankruptcy. So like their deal, I think, was expiring closer than anyone else who signed it, but like they were one of the last teams to still get paid by Bally Sports, and then they finally filed against them. It's such a mess, but the most Rangers games I see now, because I refuse to pay $20 a month for Bally Sports, and I'm too lazy to permanently VPN my router to show that I like live in Iowa or something. The only time I see is if I go to games or somehow it's a nationally televised game. It's obscene.
You know, I'm on the YouTube TV front now because I make enough money to buy some sort of cable package for the first time in my life. And YouTube TV obviously has Sunday Ticket coming up with the NFL season. And they have NBC Sports Chicago, which has White Sox games and Bulls games. So I made the pivot here. Super happy customer. I really like the service.
Yeah, you know, it was a pain when I was doing the move, dealing with YouTube TV, like letting them know, like, no, I'm now permanently in Dallas Fort Worth. But I think I've used several streaming services now at this point, but YouTube TV, say what we will, Google had it figured out, and it's easy. It works on every device. It's the one I go with. Like, I have YouTube TV still.
Here's my problem, and we'll talk about the massive Drangate news that broke last week in just a second, but I have an audience here. I have a smart audience here. Smart people listen to this podcast. I have an issue with my Chromecast, which is how I stream YouTube TV. Do you follow me so far?
Yes. Is this an original version Chromecast, or is this one of the newer ones, Android TV / Chromecasts?
I think it's one of the newer ones. I bought it a few weeks ago.
Okay, so it has the remote with it.
It has the remote with it. So
okay, I'm with you.
If you don't know the solution to this, that's okay. I'm hoping one of our listeners does. I bought this Chromecast about a month ago, and part of the appeal was that I could cast Google Chrome to my TV, which means Drangate Network, New Japan World, Wrestle Universe, etc. All of a sudden, one day, that option went away. And when I go to cast now, it says no devices found. I've restarted the Wi-Fi. I've restarted the Chromecast. I've booted and rebooted everything I know how, and I'm still getting told no devices found. If anybody can help me out with how to cast from my computer to my TV, I might make a financial donation to a cause, whether it be your wallet or a charity of your choosing. It's driving me crazy that I can't figure this out.
All right. I do tech call support for my parents all the time. My first thing is you've expended everything on the device side. What about your Chrome browsers? Have they been like, is it something where maybe the Chromecast has been updated and the browser's versions have not been updated to be
I'm on the newest version of Chrome.
Okay, then I don't have a clue.
I don't know what happened. I didn't change anything. And then one day I went to watch the Fukuoka shows 2 weeks ago and the cast option went away and I spent hours, plural, trying to figure this out and I couldn't get it. I could have watched both of the shows just on my laptop by the time with how long I was spent trying to fix this issue, which I ended up having to do anyways. It's driving me nuts just because I can't fix it and I want to be able to. So if anybody has any advice, Voices of Wrestling Discord, open the VoiceGate channel. It's the premier channel for Dragon Gate talk and tech solutions. Please help me out.
Well, usually I'd have a pithy way to segue into our next topic, but let's just get, I guess, straight into it. Official word came as of 6:27 a.m. Central Daylight Time. That's 8:27 p.m. Japanese Standard Time. Initially on June 17th, but a later version of this announcement went up on the 18th. I'll read the one from the 18th. This comes from Dragon Gate Japan Pro Wrestling's official English account, Dragon Gate EN. Hashtag Dragon Gate has come to terms on the release of Kento Kobune and Takuma Fujiwara following a suspected severe breach of contract. Attempts to resolve the issue were unsuccessful in finding a mutually satisfactory path forward. With their consent, their contracts have been terminated. So the shoe dropped.
Yeah, at a time where I don't think either of us were expecting, because as we walked everybody through 2 weeks ago, and if you're looking for in-depth analysis on the release of Kento Kobune, SB Kento, and Takuma Fujiwara, 2 weeks ago, Mike and I had this before Dragon Gate released anything. We had more information than Dave Meltzer or anybody else who had talked about the situation. And we'll victory lap in just a second, but 2 weeks ago we covered a lot of this, and I believe the phrase that we used was behavioral issues, severe behavioral issues, and it's not far off from what was said there. I think you and I were expecting this to either happen in early May when we were first tipped off to it, or right after Kobe World in July. They sort of snuck it in the in-between here, but it is now official what we've been saying for a few weeks. The underground Dark Dragon Gate Twitter rumor has come to light, and it is official: SB Kento, Takuma Fujiwara, no longer associated with Dragon Gate.
Yeah, and I guess on the surface, my reaction of this, the time frame, I wonder if it's something that they had the Okinawa tour this weekend, but there's really not much happening between now and July 1st. So this is the time to kind of get it out there. Like, they have done this in the past then. And ironically, these Okinawa and Hokkaido show tours have had these kind of things surround them. At least it feels like over the last few years. Because was it Okinawa or was it Hokkaido that was Ishida and Okuda's last shows as Dragon Gate wrestlers?
It was Okinawa that was their last shows. And then I think Ishida went first and then Okuda went, but it was this time last year. It was essentially 1 year ago.
Right. And Ishida's was later announced. So this is not completely out of usual, I guess, is what I'm trying to say with this. We also already have known both SB and Takuma, and after the official release came out, they both tweeted out their recognition of the release, both of them basically saying see you soon. One pretty standard form of there, but straight after that we've seen now a lot of announcements for them, including their first matches outside of the Dragon System officially last weekend in Big Lucha.
Yeah, so they worked the Big Lucha show on Saturday night. You can find that link on the Open the Voice Gate Twitter at Open Voice Gate. I will warn anybody, the audio for that match sounds worse than my voice does right now, and I do apologize for anybody that's going to suffer through this episode, but the Big Lucha stream had a bunch of tech issues early on. The first half of that match, the audio was all out of whack. The second half, it gets better, but as I said to some people that asked me, and I think I said this somewhere else, maybe in the Discord, it's worth suffering through audio issues because, we haven't seen these guys work since January. They have not wrestled in front of a crowd since January. And, in the way the world works now, out of sight, out of mind, everything is so forward-facing and in the moment, and we lose sight of things. this was a reminder, and it's not that we all needed it, but it was a reminder of like, oh, these guys are really good. This is a special tag team in the partnership that they form, which, you know, I don't know if that was the goal when they first went to Mexico, but it's sure as hell the goal now. And I thought it was a very fun match on the Big Lucha show.
Yeah, and it seems like in the post they have launched a YouTube channel. They always, like, since Excursion, kind of have been somewhat of a package deal, at least in Mexico. And especially with like the team with Crazy Boy and AAA. Like, the thing I'm interested in seeing is Nishikawa is still a part of AAA and was aligned with those two. So I'll be interested in seeing how that plays out.
So let me help you fill in the gap there. And, you know, this is part scoop that nobody else has reported yet. And, you know, I don't say this to gloat in any way, but I do think it's worth reminding people that maybe didn't listen 2 weeks ago or already forgot. You know, we made it very clear. Kento and Takuma like Japan, or I'm sorry, they like Mexico. They like living in Mexico. They are now living in Mexico City and are actively looking for Lucha-specific bookings. I know there is human instinct to go, well, they were in Dragon Gate, and then they worked Big Lucha, and Big Lucha has Black Generation, and so SB Kento and Takuma are going to Gleet. And look, if that happens 6 months from now, I'll be more than happy to come on here and say that I'm wrong, but that is not what these guys are looking to do. They are looking to live and work in Mexico, and specifically AAA, and of course they get their release from Dragon Gate, and what do they have? They have a AAA music video that went up on their social medias over the weekend. They are expecting to get a push in AAA. They do not have contracts at this point. That is confirmed. I reached out and confirmed that over the weekend, but they are expecting to get a push in AAA. As for Takuma Nishikawa, who went over there with SB Kento last summer, and Takuma Fujiwara obviously worked with him over there as well. Shun Skywalker did when he was in Mexico. And for La Estrella, who is currently based in Japan, but will be back in North America this summer, working in both the United States and Mexico, they are allowed to work on the same shows as Kento and Fujiwara. Right now, although nothing is official, Konnan is looking to bring La Estrella into AAA. Basically, what has happened over the last year, and I don't say this in a joking manner, this is what has happened, is that Konnan has learned that Dragon Gate wrestlers are really good. And he said so on his podcast, the Keeping It 100 podcast, which, Mike, I know you never miss an episode of. But Konnan has learned that Dragon Gate wrestlers are really good and that they pick up the lucha style very fast because of the way they're trained. And with Estrella coming back to Mexico, now Konnan is interested in booking him. It was asked on one of the sides, is it going to be an issue if Estrella is on the same show as Kento and Fujiwara? And Estrella from the Japan side said, no, it won't be an issue. So going forward, we might still see Nishikawa there with Kento and Fujiwara. We might see Estrella on the same shows as Kento and Fujiwara. We'll have to see. But, you know, come this summer, there's a chance that Nishikawa, Kento Kabune, Takuma Takuma Fujiwara, and La Estrella are all in Mexico at the same time.
Yeah, and I think that in of itself, if you're a longtime Dragon System fan or even someone who's come along since the OWE split, that in of itself is a different tenor than other departures. And that has to be said because, I mean, Yamato even completely mentioned this on the All-Star Junior Festival show that Dragon Gate and Glade don't do anything together. It's intentional. That's how it is. And that's why, like, whenever I saw a lot of that, I just kind of a little bit rolled my eyes in my head, but also it's just like, that's not that's an inaccurate reading of the situation.
Look, I think it's an uncomfortable situation for everybody involved. You know, like I told many people when this story first started to surface, I just can't believe that these two guys are gone. These are the blue chip prospects. These are the guys that I thought would one day headline Kobe World, and they would do it against one another. And while there does seem to be a public degree of understanding loosely what happened at this point, the situation is still more complicated than I think a lot of people realize, which is why they were released. It's not the simple story of they were doing something that wasn't culturally appropriate in Japan, in another country, and thus they no longer work for Drangate. There are layers and layers to it, and at some point, maybe those details will come to light. Right now, and I believe I said this to Rovert, of all people, because he's been following the story, because, of course, you know, a lot of what they do in Japan, let's say 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, but when these guys are grown adults, because right now they're not, will depend on if this story stays what it is, which right now it's a story, or if this story becomes a scandal. And at that point, what Japanese companies will want to touch them, will want to work with them, will want to book them. Because right now on the surface, if you just go, oh, wait a minute, these guys are free from Drangate, I think you'd be foolish to not try to bring them into your company, whether you're in America, or I'm sorry, the United States, Mexico, or Japan. But if you're in Japan, there's another layer that needs to be assessed there, and that will determine a lot of their future. But right now, the focus for those two is Mexico and AAA specifically, and down the road, we will see what happens.
Yeah, no, just to put a finer point on it, this is, trying to think of how I want to say this. Case, I think we're having a mind meld here. You might be able to help me out with this. The way that things are phrased is very intentional, and I think that that's worth keeping in mind, and I think that's also has a lot of stuff in play with Mexico, with them wanting to work in Mexico as well. I don't know if this press release of it, if there was more of a, oh, they're jumping to another promotion in Japan thing, you know?
Do you think the official statement was softer than what you were expecting?
No. I mean, the language used, I mean, I think, let's not pull punches here. I think that the vast majority of people have been able to connect dots, and with those dots out there, this is what I about expected, unless there was something else that happened that would have been completely new to at least me. I don't know for you, but from everything that we've been hearing for the last 6 weeks, this was about what I expected. Maybe the language and the translation being a little different. How about you?
Well, I only ask because, you know, this is obviously a serious situation. That's not an understatement. It's, you know, the result of it is like, wow, these guys are gone. I mean, that's what we reported. We knew it was going to happen. Then you still see it in the flesh and you think like, wow, okay, all right. We were right, but God, does it suck to be right. It does feel like that statement left the door open 1%, whereas in the build to the official release and some of the things that I had heard, some of the people I had talked to, it seemed like this was going to be a, for lack of a better term, a banishment of sorts. And I don't think it's that. You know, they're not on good terms. They're not working for the company. But okay, it did feel like, let's have a conversation down the line. And I think you right. can sort of see where I'm going with this, where, you know, some guys on the Drangate roster are of a certain age, and at some point they will go away and there will be a regime change. And I think the next guys in power, in the same way that we've seen Kondo come back and we've seen Ultimo come back and we've seen Sugawara exactly. come back and all these returns. Okay, now when the next generation is in power, and specifically the next one, I think it'll be very interesting to see what becomes of everybody involved in this situation.
Right. Yeah. Like it's something that if there was going to be like a more firm initial statement, they would have made it. And that potential future door would have been very clearly shut. Right. Like I'll say this, Gaze, part of us and the way we handled this thing was reflexive on seeing what the home office was going to do, right? Like for the last 6 weeks, as we've been reporting, talking to people and getting this nailed together, we are still waiting to see what was going to happen. And everything kind of, in a way, happened the way I was kind of suspecting, and in the way of doing that. I don't know necessarily, like, I the door open is something that I still can potentially see. I don't know if it's like a regime change, seniority based thing, or if it's something that, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, you know, I mean, who's to say what might happen? I mean, like 4 or 5 years ago, Case. If we're talking 5 years ago, it was 2018. We did not think Ultimo was going to walk back through that door.
No, and you know, I think things have largely, well, I mean, they've gone the way we said they were going to. They were going to be released and based in Mexico and work in Mexico. And I've held true to that, and I've let people entertain their New Japan Junior Division theories and their NOAH theories, which, let me tell you right now, you'll hear it first and you'll hear it often on this podcast. SB Kento and Takuma Fujiwara are not going to Pro Wrestling NOAH. And if they do, there is a bigger story at play there. I would be stunned by that. They would not be going to Pro Wrestling NOAH.
They would not be the prime motivator for whatever that story would be. They would just be secondary, like something else happening in the wake of it, I would say.
Yeah, so they're going to hang out in Mexico. And I am of the belief of, you know, once the powers that be are no longer in power and things get shaken up, okay, well, maybe that's something to revisit if both parties have an interest there. But we're not at that point yet. We're in the beginning of a new chapter, which is these guys are freelance Mexican independent workers now. And we'll see what comes of that. They have the talent to succeed anywhere in the world. It's going to be a matter of opportunity. I mean, I worry for anybody that wants to make a living off of AAA just because of how disjointed and unorganized that promotion is. I mean, I would give anything to have these guys jump to CMLL already, because if they showed up in Arena Mexico, I think they would destroy. And Mike, if they showed up to Arena Mexico, I'd be buying you and I plane tickets to the next show, because I would want to be in person to see that fiasco. But they're going to be in AAA. And we'll see what comes of that. Like I said, you know, just I worry for anybody that wants to make a living off of AAA and all the nonsense and the hoops that they have to jump through. But these guys are talented, so we will see what comes of it.
Yeah, and it's something that, I mean, at least for me, who's to say, like SB, he might show up on Texas Lucha shows.
Like, that'd be great.
To my knowledge. Yeah, like, so there might be potential of getting to catch the two for me in person, which, you know, kind of exciting. I'm down with that. Did you have any other points you wanted to touch on the overall SB Taku situation? You had an excellent article up on voicesofwrestling.com. I forget which day of the week. I think it was a Saturday.
I was expecting to write a big Kobe World feature that day. And then I woke up and I saw that tweet and I was like, well, okay, all right, well, we might not get to the Kobe World article that I wanted to write now, because that was sort of my time to write, and it was spent doing SB Kento and Takuma Fujiwara things. That article's up on voicesofwrestling.com. It's entitled Shooting Stars. What'd I call it? Shooting Stars, the Demise of Drangate's Best Prospects. In there, again, I kind of talked about how we got here. And then what I wanted to talk about with you, Mike, was the legacy of SB Kento and Takuma Fujiwara. We'll start with seniority. We'll start with Kento. When you think about his time in Dragon Gate, December 2019 through, for all intents and purposes, July of 2022, what are your thoughts?
So it's interesting, because if we are going to kind of handle it just as this time period with no expectation of a future, in a lot of ways, like, it's a much more compressed time span, and of course it's like a completely different generation. It's not completely dissimilar to Magnum Tokyo's legacy in a way. I wonder if when we get away from this, like, I have been thinking about for next year being the 25th anniversary of the Torimon landing, like a big Magnum Tokyo article, and I've been going back through stuff, looking up stuff and the time since deciding to do this. And the person that, like, he's starting to remind me of as we're kind of leaving his era is Magnum Tokyo. And I think that is, like, there were very few people who had sheer presence immediately the way that both SB Kento and Magnum Tokyo had. And it was something that was clear in his debut match with Yamato and Naruki Doi and now Jackie Funky Kamei. And it was as clear as Kobe World 2022. He had a command of presence that was preternatural, in the same way that Magnum Tokyo was just a star on a different level in 1999 and 2000. And that's what I find myself kind of thinking about. It's less so than his huge turn becoming SB Kento and then doing four out of the five eliminations of the RED versus Toriumon Generation Disbands match. I think about like just like this was someone that like presence wise, charisma wise, that does not come very often. And the person that reminds me most like him is Magnum Tokyo.
That's really interesting because I hadn't really thought about that comparison at all, but I certainly see what you mean, especially on the front of these guys just wrestling with so much charisma from the start. I mean, you watch Magnum in Mexico in 97, in WCW in 98, Michinoku Pro in 98, or obviously you'll watch the first Toriumon show, and in the ring with Shima and Dragon Kid and Don Fuji and Suwa, there is Magnum Tokyo. And for whatever you want to say about Magnum, a man with a very complicated legacy, oh my God, does he look like the biggest star ever on that first Toriumon show. So I get it. I will read you real quick a passage that I wrote. This is January 2020 Open the New Year Gate review. This is the first SB Kento, at the time Kento Kabune match, that I reviewed in the written word for voicesofwrestling.com. I said, and I quote, "Kabune has a bright future ahead of him. There's an undeniable poise that he wrestles with. He portrays a shocking amount of confidence for someone so young in their career. Given what I've seen, which is very little, I think the aptest comparison for him right now is Naruki Doi. Yes, that's a loaded statement given the fact that Doi is the current Open the Dream Gate champion, but this current title reign will not defy Doi's legacy. Doi is a guy that is always in the hunt, always doing something important, and always making his presence felt. And I can very easily see Kabune, who is framed in a similar fashion and wrestles a simplified version of Doi's style, fitting that mold," end quote. So I compared him there to Doi. I think by March, right before the pandemic, I was calling him the next Yamato. And then certainly, once we were in the latter half of 2020, I was convinced he was the next Yamato, a guy that could put this company on its shoulders, need be, and carry them into brighter pastures. And to your point about things being so quick and condensed in the grand scheme of things, it's shocking. You know, going back and looking at his history, he wins the Bravegate belt and turns heel in November of 2020. He's headlining Dead or Alive 2021. He's got the Bravegate run in the summer of 2021. Going into this past year, going into 2022, you know, he has the Kamei match at the end of 2021, and then he goes on a losing streak for a lot of 2022, and then it ends up with him and Hyo in this Bravegate match at World, which seemed like it was planting the seeds for something big in the future. And that's what I'm left wrapping my head around is, you know, what are the things that Kento and Fujiwara didn't get to do? And there was no greater mystery for me than what was coming up for Kento and Hyo. Clearly a bond was formed there. Clearly in storyline, there was something more down the pipe that they had planned, and we'll never get to it now.
Yeah, we're going to revise that 2025 Kobe World prediction we were both thinking about him standing tall with the Dream Gate. Takuma Fujiwara it's almost in a lot of ways kind of reminiscent, like not like in the particulars, but where he was in his career to Taiji Ishimori.
Interesting. I like that. Okay. That's two comps I hadn't really thought of, but two comps that I like.
Yeah. So Ishimori, the rushed replacement ace for Toriumon X, was looped in through Dragon Door, but was quickly getting his way out of there and into pro wrestling Noah. And it was something that Ishimori, I feel like in 2023, like everyone goes like, oh yeah, no, he was like the sailor boy. But that's kind of all you ever talk about with his link with the Dragon System. And I wonder if when we like look at this in 2033, if it's just going to be like, oh yeah, and he was a promising rookie, remember that 20 years ago he did like 6 months in Dragon Gate before going to Mexico and never came back. Like, I wonder if that's a future we see for Fujiwara.
I'll put this in a way that only you and maybe JoJo Rennie will appreciate. He could very easily be the Dragon System's Chris Coughlin.
Yeah, no, I totally get what you're saying.
And for the 99% of people that don't know what that means, Chris Coughlin was a Florida Marlins player, won NL Rookie of the Year, and looked like, you know, future All-Star, MVP candidate, just a really exciting young player, and just never followed up on it. Never had another year even close to what he did his rookie year.
As with a lot of Florida Marlins.
You know, the other thing I want to talk about with Kento real quick before I talk about Fujiwara, he single-handedly, I mean, Kikuta has a pinfall in the match. He single-handedly killed the Toriumon generation. And looking back at some of the gifts from that match, the decimation of Dragon Kid, the Konamama Ichikawa run-in German suplex on SP Kento, that is not only one of the best matches I've ever seen, five-star match for me, I mean, I really put it up in that level, but the way it was constructed, in the way that even in, you know, not an empty arena, but a very limited capacity crowd, clap crowd, this, that, the other thing, you know, I always thought that was the difference with Dragon Gate and almost everybody else during the pandemic. I'll use New Japan specifically. You know, New Japan tried to elevate a lot of guys during the pandemic, and I was always left as a viewer really unsure. Is this working? Is this not working? What's going on? What level are they at? I just can't tell from the way they book.
Buddy, I think I was kind of leading the charge on that, and leave it to Gene Blast to prove me wrong.
But, you know, Dragon Gate, we'd watch it and we go, well, wait a minute, Kamei is certainly in a better spot than he was. And, you know, Kikuta, okay, he's this young heel. We don't know much about him, but he's clearly being elevated. And then there's SB Kento. And this man is pinning Doi and Yoshino and Genki Horiguchi and all of these guys, all of these legends that don't take pinfalls, and then submitting Dragon Kid in the middle of the ring. And we knew, it was like, okay, this isn't cultural differences of we like a guy more than the Japanese crowd. This isn't, you know, the internet crowd playing their favorites. This guy is just a fucking superstar, and he's doing it in the hardest time ever to become a superstar. And that will ultimately be, you know, what I think of him when I think of him in Dragon Gate, is a can't miss prospect doing can't miss work during the bleakest timeline, in him really being the guy. You know, I think very highly of a lot of 2020 and 2021 Dragon Gate, and the guy that I think of during that time period, you know, 2020, I think of SB Kento, 2021, I think of Masquerade versus RED, and who was in almost all of those matches? It was SB Kento. This was a guy who was just built different. I always compare him, and when he was trying to get bookings in America and promoters were to reach out to me, I would say he's Japanese Adam Cole. You know, he's incredibly charismatic. He's incredibly talented. And imagine if he was 3 inches taller. Imagine what his life would be like. And, you know, we won't ever know that. But just what a natural talent. And what a wrestler that I will really miss seeing on Dragon Gate shows.
Yeah. And it was something that was even, like, very clear that he got it. Even, like, the rather depressing indie run he had, I think that's fair to say, outside of like West Coast Pro, Deadlock, and I'm blanking on the other one, Expect the Unexpected.
I think he did Prestige.
Prestige, and Expect the Unexpected. But it was something that he got U.S. crowds immediately. Like, I remember I constantly go back to the Alec Price match he had, where in GCW, where he was just brought in as a replacement. And by the end of the match, the crowd was cheering for him, and it was like, oh no, this guy got it. And that Cursed King of the Indies case.
I was going to say, think about the King of the Indies show. He's the only bright spot on that entire show. They brought in all of these names, all of these indie stars, and all anybody wanted to do after that show was talk about how good SB Kento was, and rightfully so.
Right. So, like, that is, at least for me, like, of course, bummed he's no longer within Dragon Gate, all of those things. I'm fascinated to see what the next 5 years look like for him in particular, because he's someone that, like, there may be a cultural gap a little bit, but he understands pro wrestling at a level that, like, it happens very rare that you see someone do what he did at King of the Indies. And that it's going to be fascinating to see if he takes from that in his future. And I think that's what I'm going to be looking forward to.
And I think a lot of the same can be said for Takuma Fujiwara, who I want to start by throwing this at you, Mike. Are you aware he only had one pinfall victory in his entire Dragon Gate career?
Yeah, it was that five-way rookies match to decide who faced Aya like 2 days later at Champion Gate 2023 or 2022.
So just to put a greater emphasis on that, yeah, it was that five-way rookie elimination match where it was him and the Ahashi brothers and Minorita and Fuda, and they constructed a match to where Fujiwara clearly looked like the best of the bunch, but didn't look dominant. He only beat Ishinihashi with a sunset flip to get him to that match with Dragon Daya. He never won another match in his Dragon Gate career. He was on the winning side of some tag team matches, but he himself never won another match, which is mind-blowing. Mike, we talked about this guy legitimately, and I stand by this. From January of 2022 through May of 2022, he was one of the best wrestlers in the world. In the conversation with a Moxley, with an Okada, with a Danielson, Omega, etc., he was in that conversation before he went to Mexico. And even though his work in Mexico ultimately subsided just because he didn't have the same quality of opponent, the same things you said about SB Kento, just understanding wrestling on a fundamental level, I was so blown away. I was already in love with this kid when he started wrestling in Dragon Gate, and I just saw the way that crowds took to him, that he took to it, the way he took to new challenges. It was all so exciting. And then I saw him in Mexico, and I saw him just get it immediately, whereas La Estrella did it, and Junta from Noah did it. Fujiwara just got it. And it doesn't surprise me, with everything that we've learned about these guys, that they just like living in Mexico, and they like working lucha shows, and they like living that life. Because from Fujiwara's first match on, it was like, oh, he...
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
He looks like a veteran. I mean, he looks like he's guiding people through his matches. That's insane. At the time, he was 21 years old. Well, what he is abnormal. And if it works out in Mexico, great. If it works out elsewhere, great. As someone that, yes, does a Dragon Gate podcast, and I try to separate, you know, we try to be as objective as we can on this show, but as somebody that is just merely a fan of the promotion, a gut punch to lose Takuma Fujiwara. To me, he is everything this promotion strives to be from an in-ring standpoint and from a charismatic standpoint. In losing him, we will see. You know, I think these are the biggest losses the company's had since the OWE split. I said at the time last year, it was proven right. Kaito Ishida, that's going to matter more in the short term than in the long term. By October, Ishida debuted in Dragon Gate was more than okay with where they were at. Losing Kento and Fujiwara, I don't think it hurts in the short term. I think it could hurt them in the long term.
Yeah, it's something that it's just the giant question mark, I feel like. That, like, with Ishida, we didn't really have that question mark because we already saw so much of him. I mean, like, he was almost a 10-year veteran before he left Dragon Gate. Like, that's the wild thing about, like, Ishida was around for, like, 8 years. He was injured for a bunch of it, but he was around for a long time. We just did not have that with Kento and Takuma, and that just, since we didn't have that time, that just leaves us with more questions. Case, you brought up the OWE split. Take a guess who just showed up on my TV screen as we're recording.
Oh, would that be one DJ Takahiro Yamamura?
No, he was on earlier. One Junji from OWE.
And how's Junji looking?
Well, he just came out with his pole arm and he's spinning it around. And he's still looking as cool as hell as he did in 2018.
Wait, what's but his I don't pole know. Arm?
He has like a spear. It's like a halberd.
Oh, good lord.
Yeah, and because he was one that had the black and red face paint.
Okay, look, bring back Gao Jingja. That man could have changed wrestling forever. And I still think about the alternate timeline where it's like, what if the OWE kids are just on Dynamite? Like, what if that's just a thing that we came to know and love and it didn't happen? Logistically, it was impossible. And I got to be honest, Junji showing up in Gleet doesn't make me too excited.
What if instead of Wardlow, it was Aben?
That'd be fucking awesome. I think Aben follows me on Twitter still. I hope he's doing well.
He went back into modeling. He's a male model now. Yeah, which, because of course,
do you remember there was like the... God, it's weird how we all like really cared about OWE for a second, because there was the thing going around that Aben had retired, and then he found out about it because I think people tagged him, and he had to tweet like, no, still committed to OWE, and then like 6 months later it was dead. But he was very online for an OWE wrestler.
Yeah, because he was the one that all the TikToks were about before we knew what TikTok was.
What a great app. I love it.
I did not know about TikTok before OWE.
I was early on TikTok because I watched a lot of funny looking people doing lip syncs to country music songs, because that's kind of what the app was at first, because it came from the Musical.ly app, which, you know what Musical.ly was?
It was a karaoke lip sync app, right?
Yeah, which I don't get it. I wasn't an active participant on it, but I loved watching it. So I was early on TikTok, so I got a lot of rednecks doing funny things and a lot of Chinese wrestling experimentation.
Which, like, to be honest, that's all I really want from a short video site. Like, unless it's things exploding or people, like, getting owned in the America's Funniest Home Videos vein. Like, that's why Vine was so great. It was 7 seconds, perfect amount of time for a kid to run around with a knife or someone to be hit in the nuts.
Do you have any other... Well, let me ask you this before we move on from these guys. You know, I talked about Kento and sort of what was left for him, which was... You know, a feud with Hyo and his eternal rival and Jackie Funky Kamei, and what he would have done with Madoka Kakuta, let alone the fact that he never wrestled a Mochizuki Jr., a Kaito Nagano, a Yoshiki Kato. For Fujiwara, what do you think was left on the table for him?
I mean, I don't think I'm being hyperbolic, but like his entire career.
I think that's fair.
I'm not trying to be flippant, but I mean, he was like, I think that if you were someone who's now new to Dragon Gate and you just joined up in 2023, you mentioned it a little bit about him in early 2022. Like, we had Jay on the program and Jay openly said, talking like, oh yeah, no, he was the best part of those shows. And just the potential of what that could have been, at least in the near term.
He was becoming a house show draw. Because people, they'd want to show up to whatever, you know, hotel conference center they were booked in whatever village they ran in, and they wanted to see what Fujiwara was going to do. He became that level of a draw instantly. This made me sick to my stomach thinking about, we never got Takuma Fujiwara versus Masaki Mochizuki in a singles match.
Yeah, we only got very, very shallow into the rookie versus vets things for him. Like, I remember a Fuji match, but that was about it.
That feels like, I mean, that's like an entire lost story now of Mochi and Fuji and like Kondo versus Fujiwara and Minorita, but at the time Takumi Hayakawa and Shoya Sato. That was like the Sato versus Fuji thing was real. And then one day that just because Sato got hurt and had to retire, which anybody you ask, they go, well, the victory was that Sato debuted in the first place, you know, not that he had to retire young. That was sort of what everybody expected to happen. They were amazed that he could just debut at all. But like, they dedicated time to Sato versus Fuji and it just disappeared one day.
Yeah. And especially with like Sato like taking it to Fuji, like that was like, yeah, the big thing is like Sato was starting to get his ass, and then the class of 2021 were beating down Don Fuji. Like, it was like right to the point where they were about to make that singles match where probably Sato was going to win with a cross arm breaker.
So I guess what I need to do now, and I know this match is on YouTube, but I think it would be a fascinating match to look back on now, is to look at Sato's retirement match, which was Fuji, Mochi, Ryo Saito, and Susumu versus Ishin, Minorita, Shoya Sato, and Takuma Fujiwara. That's on YouTube. That probably needs to be rewatched at some point. Just to, that match was only a year ago. Doesn't that seem like it was five?
Yeah, and that's why I wonder, like, how much Fujiwara's history will be linked to Dragon Gate, like Ishimori's. Because it does feel like that, like, time distortion, that was a lifetime ago.
Yeah, it's, I mean, he's been gone for a year now. His last Dragon Gate match was June 5th. It was high-end, Ben K, Dragon Kid, and Yamato versus Estrella, Fujiwara, and Ultimo. And, you know, we're now in that position where, again, that's just, it's amazing the way that time works and the situation we are in. My final point for you before I move on, do you agree with my statement that this is the biggest loss since the OWE split?
I think just because, and you laid this out beautifully in your article, these guys that left since 2018, you could put them in a couple camps. You have the veteran retiree camp. You had the folks who'd rather be doing something else. And then you have Shingo Takagi, right? Like when we really boil down to it, you have like the retirement camp, Shingo Takagi, who, and I guess you can kind of put Eita in that as well. And then just people that just didn't work out. And these two don't fall into those categories whatsoever. Like these two, like, will SB Kento, like, again, like, compressed era, but the importance that SB Kento held for those 3 years is you can't tell the story of Dragon Gate over 2020 through 2023 without mentioning SB Kento heavily in it. And that makes the fact that it's a loss. It's a, I think the first time when people are like asking me about the situation is like, well, what's your read of it? My response almost to a person was, it's a bummer. And like that, and I did not think about that about KS. I'm sorry to say this. I did not think about that about Super Shisa. Did not really think about that with Keisuke Okuda. Shoya Sato was a bummer that quickly became very clear that like the accomplishment was already there. And
yeah, it almost would have been a bummer for his body if he would have continued to wrestle.
Right. Yeah. No, for sure. And that's why I feel like that, just like if you compare them like point to point, it's just like these are two completely different animals. Like when everyone over the summer was chicken littling and running around like the sky was falling, things weren't falling. And it's not that we expect things to be falling without SB and Taku. It's just one of those things that you had to feature them heavily in whatever fantasy booking scenario you engage with the future Dragon Gate, whereas you really couldn't do that with Naruki Doi. Like, you know, like you should, like if you're playing Total Extreme Warfare case, like you're going to use Naruki Doi a lot, but you know that you know that you only have a couple more years of warfare, whereas you have your Kento Kabunes and Takuma Fujiwaras who are basically like, hey, we will figure into whatever plan you have as long as this, because we are that young and that experienced. And I think kind of the roundabout way about me answering that. Sorry.
No. I that's exactly what I was looking for. I mean, my big cross to bear is, one, Dragon Gate historically, Toriumon and Dragon Gate historically have had lots of turnover. It's actually specifically only the Golden Era, like 2013 to 2017, where there wasn't a lot of guys coming in and out of the promotion. That is a historical anomaly in the 25 years that this promotion has existed. And then two, you know, this narrative of, oh my God, they're losing so many guys. What are they going to do? It's like, okay, well, Shisa meant nothing. Gamma meant nothing. I loved Riki Ihashi, but he meant nothing. Shoya Sato meant nothing. And they are in a position where they don't need Kaito Ishida. So are they losing guys? Yes. But if you're losing, you know, the guys at the bottom of the ladder, it's fine. You know, they've been able to survive just fine without them. So it's interesting just hearing the way that some people talk about modern Dragon Gate and, you know, the sinking ship that it is and the chaos backstage and all of these things that I just don't think are true. I think they've lost a lot of rookies and they've finally shed some dead weight. And I say this with love to Super Shisa, but the dead weight of, you know, veterans on the roster that were there for far too long.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting comparing and contrasting that era, because it was not like that there weren't departures then. Like Naoki Tanizaki probably was the most prominent one, I would say. But that also was a time period that really, comparing the Dragon Gate development program in 2023 to 2016, like people were starting to come out. Like 2016, just to put it into like context, was seen as like an earth-shattering class just because of the amount of people there, because of how for basically a decade leading up to it, it'd be one person to a lot of years of no one. And I think that that also had maybe not forced complacency in that time, but there was not necessarily a Kento Kobune, Takuma Fujiwara, or even a Mochizuki Jr. just begging, like figuratively begging for ring time that shouldn't be going to like your Super Shisas, you know?
No, I mean, look, the gap from Yamato's debut to Ben K's debut is actually pretty bleak. You know, it's T-Hawk, who took a while to develop, and it's Eita, who took a while to develop, and then it's Lindemann, who was good from the start, but had a ceiling on him because of his size. Those are the guys that made an impact from 2006 to 2016. It's, you know, a phenomenon that's come through in the last decade where we go, oh, you know, Dragon Gate, they're the best at developing young talent. They always have guys coming into the system. That wasn't the case for 10 years. It's new. It's 2016 and beyond that we've really seen a change in the way things go, and specifically a change from 2018 and beyond when certain people left the promotion and all of a sudden the pathway to become a Dragon Gate wrestler changed, and from my understanding, for the better.
Yeah, and it's another thing to think about when we say like 10 years. Like, you could really take it back if you want to be if you want to take a super pessimistic view of it, you could take it back to Toriumon X. Like, there was like a 15-year period that, like, after Toriumon X landing, like, it was okay, you have Shingo, and then 6 months later we have Hulk. It was a lot more similar to the rest of the wrestling industry right now, and it really was those last 7 years. And I think you do, as you're saying, you do have to look and put on your thinking cap and think about who's there now, who's not there, and how things have changed. And I feel like our listeners can draw a similar conclusion to us, you know?
Yeah, very much so. So those are my thoughts. Those are my long-winded thoughts on the legacy of Kento Kobune and Takuma Fujiwara and Dragon Gate. And as long as they continue to be interesting, I think you and I will talk about them when it's appropriate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just like all the other departures of the Dragon System, they're still Dragon System. I mean, we don't have a whole lot to say about your Keisuke Akudas anymore, but we still keep
that. That's not true. Mike was up in my DMs this weekend talking about Keisuke Akuda. I might not have a lot to say, but Mike does.
Oh, that is someone that they made the right decision there. Looking very drawn doing Dove Pro. That's what I'll say. Looking like he like lost 25 pounds.
Yeah.
Like, and he apparently finally won a MMA exhibition. Finally.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I don't know what his OFER is at that time, but
he's like 0-8.
Yeah. It's real bad, people. You know, some people should be left in the past. And I think that we have all kind of collectively taken a look and decided, all right, Mr. Danger Zone, we could leave that in 2020. But Case, we brought up other names, some old names and generational changes, but that's because that this promotion, the Dragon System, is a promotion that the history of the promotion is intertwined. It is something that they are still maybe writing the same book, but it's a different volume right now. And announced, I'm trying to find out the exact day when this got released, but in a little bit of synchronicity, I would say, big upload from Dragon Gate, a remastered version of the first ever four-way six-man tag with English commentary, Doofixer versus Crazy Max versus Italian Connection, and I'm blanking on the fourth name right now.
Well, Shin-M2K.
Shin-M2K, yes. And interestingly enough, also on voicesofwrestling.com right now, Aaron Taub reviewing this match. I don't think Aaron knows. Whenever I talk Dragon Gate to Aaron Taub, it goes in one ear, out the other. So it's not linked whatsoever. But we have a review of someone watching that match for the first time up on Voices of Wrestling, but 8/30/2003 case. What, like, just like thinking about this match and thinking about like what to take away from it. Like, we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of it. And now that it's up, and it's the first of many, they're calling this English commentary best bout. It was Jay with Ho-Ho and Genki Horiguchi on this. I think that there's a version of it also up on YouTube, maybe?
Yeah, it's on the Dragon Gate Network YouTube channel as well, so it's free for everybody.
So, Case, I would say that with the exception of, I mean, later, like 2016, three ways and four ways, this was the special one. This is the one that kind of broke the broke the fabric of what people could expect from Lucha Wrestle, I would say.
Well, it's so good that it overshadows the two three-way trios matches from July of 2002, the July 7th one and the July 14th one, which, if you go back and watch those are some of the best matches in Toriumon history and by proxy Drangate history, but no one starts by recommending those. You know, that's not the first thing on the tip of anybody's tongue, because you have 8/30/03, which is not only, you know, I certainly wouldn't argue if you said it was the best match in Dragon System history. I wouldn't argue if you said it was one of the best matches ever. It is the, in my opinion, the entry point into this style to almost a fault, because if you watch this, it's impossible to follow 20 years later.
Yeah, and at least I would say, as a Dragon System first person, this match for like the diehards and people who get into it, this match is actually what 3/30/106 was promising to be.
That's interesting. It's the Japanese version of 3/30/106, the Blood Generation versus Doofixer match from Ring of Honor, because I think the same amazement that Chicago Ridge had for that six man is how Corkin reacts to this match, where it's good, and then it becomes, wait, what? Like, what am I watching? What is this?
And when you like look at this for where Toriumon Japan was in 2003, you're basically having the top. These were like the 12 top guys from the four top units. Like, I'm forgetting injuries at this time at right now, but when you're talking work rate wise, you really want Tsuji in there instead of Brother, and you already have Milano and Yoshino.
It's all the top guys, but Darkness Dragon, who was hurt.
Right. Yeah, I would. But also in 2003, with like that and Doofixer, I would go with Genki and Susumu. You know, like the person I was thinking about was. Yeah, it's Genki's year. Like the person I was thinking about was if this was during a Ryo Saito injury or not.
Ooh, I'm curious now. But you know, I mean, yeah, to your point, look, the match starts, and if you've never seen the match, I think Jay and Ho-Ho do a good job of breaking down the match. They're kind of weaving in and out of, this is an old match that we're doing like historical commentary of, and then in the moment commentary, which I imagine is a tremendously difficult thing to balance. And I think as they do more of these, they'll figure that out. But the big thing to note is that when the match starts, it's Shima, Magnum, Mochi, and Milano all in the ring at the same time, which is crazy. To your point, and I do have to issue a retraction here, Ryo Saito is healthy, as is Kness. The opening match on this show is Mori and Doi versus Kness and Saito. So it's all the top guys. These are the 12 biggest guys in Toriumon at the time in this match.
Yeah, and it's in the way of just like also context here for people who catch Aaron's article. They see the YouTube. They're not really kind of into what was happening at Toriumon in 2003. This is right before the Toriumon X landing, if my timeline's right. Like, this is T2P versus Toriumon Japan has ended. It's a combined roster now. You had Italian Connection going through, like, basically the only people who escaped T2P versus Dragon Gate unscathed, and they're thrust into this. I mean, you brought this up, Case, but you have Shima, you have Mochizuki, you have Magnum Tokyo. Those are the three guys for 2000 and basically 1998 through 2004. Like, those are the three sons that the Toriumon Japan era just circled around during that time. And you're throwing in Milano, who was the unquestioned ace of T2P. And then they just go out there and they weave magic.
So to your point, and I had never really thought about this in the context of this match, the Toriumon X Japanese landing was August 22nd, 2003. So a week before this match.
Right. Yeah. So like this is at a time of great turbulence within my understanding of the general Toriumon politic, I guess I would say. Like this is like after this match case, like what really is there to be said about Toriumon Japan, just Toriumon Japan proper for the remainder of the year? Like other than, of course, Genki Horiguchi being like the wrestler 2003, like this is kind of like one of the last big blasts other than like Suwa versus Dragon Kid.
It's funny that if you watch 2003 Toriumon all the way through, it's a deeply unsatisfying year of the promotion because it's peak Ultimo bullshit. It's Ultimo and Magnum with short matches, heavy angles, and some cards that are just horrific on paper. They're not much better in execution. But people think of 2003 Toriumon, they think of El Numero Uno 2003, they think of this match, and if they, you know, if they know what's up, they think of Shima in June versus Milano and Magnum from October, which is, you know, like a 4 3/4 star match. Some of the best stuff that came out of Toriumon or Dragon Gate period came out of 2003, but it's one of those years that peaks high and has a devastatingly low floor.
Yeah, and it's just such a fascinating time because you had to refresh my memory about the June match because like that is such divorce out of context of what we were getting.
It's the most hidden gem there is. It's from Rey de Parias 2003, and it's Shima, and I'm going to butcher his last name, but Jun Agayuchi?
Close enough.
He was a T2P guy, was a scrub, he was nobody. And for some reason, I don't even remember why in storyline, he got added to Crazy Max and becomes all caps June. And they do Shima and June versus Milano and Magnum, the two top heels in the company. And it's, Mike, that match is batshit crazy. I mean, it's so good. And it just comes out of nowhere. Nobody was expecting it to be that good. And so I think of that as one of the high points of 2003 Toriumon, because it is.
Yeah, June became one of the many attempted fifth members of Crazy Max. And this is the match to talk about. He did hold the British Commonwealth Junior Heavyweight Championship once, but he's now, I think he's now more known, like coincidentally, as the guy behind Secret Bay.
Yeah. So as for A30-03, look, I'll say this. I think it's the hardest match there is to write or talk about. And I think Aaron Taub ran into this. I've reviewed the match, I think for a Secret Santa, maybe, over at voiceofwrestling.com. You can't write about it. And even now, you and I have talked about everything. It's hard to talk about this match. You just have to go watch it. And luckily now, if you've never seen it, or if you just want a refresher on it, Jay and Ho-Ho on the Dragon Gate Network and on YouTube have English commentary for the first time for it.
Yeah, and it has one of those great masters from this. Like that's one of the other awesome things about them and them putting this on YouTube. We've talked about this, about how, you know, a lot of Toriumon and Dragon Gate for the longest time, I mean, came from DVD and VHS rips, so we weren't getting just the best quality available because of just how tapes work. But now we have this mastered from the original. I don't know if they were still on Digibeta in 2003. I would like to think they were. Digibeta was a fun format case.
That's certainly a Mike Spears topic that I can't contribute to as to what they were shooting on in the year 2003. I'm going to let you hypothesize that in your own time.
Yeah, I'm going to save that as a question for a special someone we'll be talking with this weekend.
Yes, a big Kobe World Pro Wrestling Festival 2023 preview hitting your feeds next week.
Yep, it's Kobe World Week. We've been cooking this up. There's a lot of stuff here. I've got a piece coming out. Liam Byrne has our preview, I believe. And we have a lot of stuff coming out next week. But yeah, we will be having a long, it's kind of the annual tradition at this point, I would say, with Jay, where we talk about Kobe World and kind of the state of Dragon Gate. I'm certain we'll have a lot of interesting stuff to talk about, Jay, and you can expect that on your feeds this weekend, probably on Tuesday. But Case, I know you are right now. You're playing through the pain here. We're about to go in here. But Case, we're at this nice point. Like, the one good thing about Dragon Gate's calendar this year is it's very clearly defined into first 6 months, last 6 months. This is not necessarily a Dragon System Buffet episode, even though it's kind of has a tenor of one of those. We were going to do full half year awards, Case. I know your voice is hurting a little bit here, so let's just talk about the top three matches that we have so far in Dragon Gate in 2023, at least in the first half before we get out of here.
Yeah, we can absolutely do that. My match of the year this year, I'll go 3-1. How about that? I'll go beauty pageant style in a way. My third best match of the year, I think it's a match that I like more than every other human on the planet. Shun Skywalker versus Yuki Oshioka from January 12th. What are your thoughts on this one?
That was my number four.
I didn't realize you were so high on it. I thought you were much lower, actually.
No, I had it at 4.5, and my star ratings, my 3 and 2 are at 4.5, and my only 4 and 3/4 stars match is my match of the year. So this was like, you know how I do my rankings. I kind of have to stick true to my ranking, to my rating. And when it came down to it, I liked the other matches, the two I selected at 4.5 stars a bit more.
To me, this is peak Shun Skywalker as just this brooding, plotting heel. This match, unfortunately, just missed the cutoff for vocal audiences, so it's kind of the last relevant match of the clap crowd era. But it carried the entire time for me. Shun just beats and beats and beats on Yoshioka. Eventually, the champion makes a comeback. And then Shun is just stronger. Shun is just better, and he wins the Dreamgate belt. A super satisfying match for me right now, my number three match of the year. What about you?
So my number three match of the year is from June 2nd, Korakuen, the Open the Twin Gate title match. Kongo's Shuji, Kondo, and Kano defending it against M3K, Susumu, and Kanda.
Let's talk about it now because it's my number two. You have the floor.
Yeah, this is just one of those matches that it's going to be interesting how the schedule is with it being so like backloaded towards like the big shows, King of Gate, whereas in the first half of the year, other than, of course, Madoka Kakuta, I know I've been on this soapbox for a while. Susumu and Kanda are one of the big stories of the promotion, and just like the demolition of Kanda's knee and the way they worked about it, like the PFS on the floor just landing on his knee, and it is something where we talk so much about Yasushi Kanda, this perhaps being the best match of his entire career, but who's the backbone of every one of these matches when we talk about the Twin Gate division, when we talk about Dragon Gate really over the last 25 years? Who is the backbone? Susumu. And Susumu was excellent with this getting in towards the end. And then I just go back to Ryo Saito at ringside selling the King Kong Lariat in the finishing stretch. And I'm sorry, like those are the moments that like will last with me. And I think that this match probably it was strongly number three for me. Like I, as much as like I like Shun and Yoshioka, as soon as I saw them all listed, this wasn't easy.
In a year where we're going to get at least two Omega versus Ospreay matches and Brian Danielson versus Kazuchika Okada, there is no chance this match finishes outside of my top 10 this year. It might end up being my number 10 if the second half of the year is loaded. I just loved this match. It's the best Kanda match I've ever seen. Kano was next level good. Kondo was next level good. Susumu was Susumu. I have no notes. 4 3/4 from me.
All right, then, since that was your number two match, let me talk about my number two match, which I think is your number one. From Dead or Alive on May 5th, the Open the Dreamgate title match, Shun Skywalker versus Madoka Kakuta. I had it at 4.5 stars, and they told a story.
Yeah, I mean, look, they stuck the landing. You know, this was telling stories the right way. This was wrestling as theater, if you will, but done in a way that is digestible and not just atrociously awful. It was Shun versus Kakuta 2 years after Kakuta's monumental injury, and it was everything that it should have been. You know, Shun beat him down. Kakuta showed why he was the hottest guy in the promotion, and in the end, the good guy won. They stuck the landing here. It was 4 3/4 stars for me, my Dragon Gate match of the year up to this point, and I think my number two match of the year worldwide behind Omega versus Ospreay.
Yeah, it's something where this is one of those matches that not only we're going to look back 5 years ago and be like, oh yeah, that was like the story of Madoka Kakuta's career, like, is going to be highlighted. Like, if this is not like the underlined point about he has this this career-defying match with someone 2 years to the day after having a very traumatic injury, I don't know what else would be. And then you also have the fact that I think like 5 years from now, we will be saying 5/5/23, not just because of this match, but because of the launch of the Reiwa generation. And I think that in of itself, because I'm not like a pure in-ring person, like you can't be completely divorced of the situation. Like, we tried that for 3 years with clap crowds. I think everyone at the end of the day can agree, like, as much as you can try to ignore it, you have to encounter intangibles. And this is a match that I can't think of a match really, probably other than Kobe World 2019, where it felt like such a predestined and momentous moment, that I can't think of very many moments of that level like this match.
The only caveat I would have in the gap between Ben versus Pac at 2019 and this match in May of 2023 is, and it's funny, I was thinking about this match today and how I want to live it again in a better timeline, was Eita versus Doi from 2020 when Eita won the belt. Because that was Eita's moment. I mean, that was a Kobe World main event that just happened to take place in Wakayama. And that felt like a giant deal when it happened to me.
Yeah, and I think for you, how that Wakayama show was, that was for me in 2019. I mean, I have my L publicly posted on Voices of Wrestling about that, about what moment I thought that was. But this one, it feels even more crystallized as we're now a month in, 15 days away from it. So that was your number one match of the year, correct?
Yeah, that was. So your number one, I did not have in my top three. Spoiler, I had it at my number four. Please wax poetically about the best match you've seen in Dragon Gate this year.
This is the best match I've seen in wrestling all year, Case. I like this more than Omega versus Ospreay 1. I like this more than the Gene Blast, and I love the Gene Blast. But my match of the year right now is the Rey de Parejas Finals from March 2nd from Corkin Hall. It was Susumu Mochizuki and Izushi Kanda versus Madoka Kakuta and Yuki Oshioka, where I went 4 3/4. And it was something where, from the minute go, with Kanda and Susumu doing Alcapoco tornadoes and like Tope con hellos, it was one of those matches where it was unrelenting. It was the idea of these two guys past their physical prime, maybe not their wrestling and emotional prime, but past their wrestling prime, taking on the two main characters of Dragon Gate and just not taking everything that Yoshioka and Kakuta dished out to them. Yoshioka, fresh off losing the Dream Gate, having a excellent Rey de Parejas, and Madoka Kakuta deep in the build to what we would see him as nowadays. And again, Yazushi Kanda, he's had 2 4.5-star matches in the first half of 2023, Case.
He's having the best year of his career. I don't know of another way to describe it.
You know how much I was like, I would crack wise about Gamma 2020 Wrestler of the Year, Case.
You would famously crack wise about that.
I mean, it was on the whiteboard, baby. It was a real thing. But this match, just like I still think about spots from this match. I still think about Kanda pulling out the tornado. I still think about the discus lariat from Kakuta, where the young guys finally prevailed. The young guys put down the old guys, but we waited just 5 months, or not even 5 months, 3 months later, where now the original tag team rings supreme. And it's magical. It's a match that I don't think it's back up on the network now, but I want to go rewatch it now talking about it.
No, it should be back up on the network. Everything through Dead or Alive is back up on the network now.
Well, I know what I'm watching tonight, as I just got depressed by your boy in Gleet. You would think I'd be really into Jun Tancho and Tetsuya Izuchi versus Hayato Tamura and Kazuma Sakamoto, but one guy there did not have the dog in him in that match.
You know, I do genuinely appreciate all the people on the Open the Voice Gate Discord channel that explained to me why they are enjoying Gleet. I mean, genuinely enjoyed reading those comments. And the one that stood out to me that I agree with is when I watch Gleet, I don't feel like I wasted my time. And sometimes I feel that way watching Noah or other promotions. And I went, you know what? I have issues with Gleet, but same. I can let them live just for that reason alone.
Yeah, yeah. Jun Tancho did a crazy apron tobekalo on that. I think I'm coming a Tancho guy. I think I am.
You and Shima.
Hey, you know, so sometimes you got to get on the same page there. Well, Pudge is right now flipping out. I think we will probably have covered all that we can this week. Is there anything else you want to touch on before we're out of here?
No, like I said, next week, Kobe World Pro Wrestling Festival preview. You, me, and Jay from Dragon Gate English Commentary will be breaking down everything from Kobe World.
Yep, absolutely. And keep your eyes peeled onto voicesofwrestling.com throughout next week, as we'll be having all kinds of Dragon Gate content go up and the lead up to Kobe World. It is Kobe Pro Wrestling Festival 2023, Case. It's only 12 days away.
Get into it.
But that's going to do it here for us this week on Open the Voice Gate. Thank you all for listening. If you would like to support the show, one of the best ways to do that is to go to your podcast platform of choice, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Those are the three big ones. And please rate and review us. It's the best way for people can discover Open the Voice Gate. But you could follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. Case is at _ in your case. I'm at Fujihaya. Thanks for coming to Open the Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next week. Take care.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Cheering at pro wrestling shows in Japan is back, and 2023 is already shaping up to be a big year in the history of pro res. That's why you should listen to the Emerald Flow Show. From the Royal Road to the Green Mat, Paul and Gerard take you into the world of All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling NOAH. Not only do we analyze events, but we examine business, who is getting over, what angles are working or not. Occasionally, we take a look at other Japanese promotions like DDT and Zero One. So if you're looking for more coverage of the world of Japanese wrestling, check out the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on all of your favorite podcast apps.